It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's how I learned the true meaning of Christmas. Excuse me. But I signed a pretty serious NDA, so I can't tell you. It was exciting. It's cool.
Well, why even bring it up if you can't?
I don't have a lot going on. These are the things that I like to tell people about.
Well, it's kind of a downer, you know, when you tell somebody you know something, but you can't tell. I mean, if you can't tell them, just don't bring it up.
Why do you hate Christmas?
You know, if I were the one introducing something like that and then I said I couldn't talk about it, you'd be complaining too.
Yes, but you're not me, William. Come on. You don't want to be me. Nobody wants to be me. Bad meter stick.
I guess that's true.
So, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that changes flavor the longer you chew it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is our 316th flavor.
What actually is the passage, John 3:16?
For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish but have everlasting life.
That's it?
Wow. Well, for some people that's like, that summarizes the entirety of the gospel, so.
It is a big one, I gotta admit, but it's weird. Well, this goes back to the thing, this is an issue I have with proselytizing in general. According to your faith, you are instructed to spread the word. Got that. But do you really think your neighbors are not familiar with the Bible and with all the Jesus stuff?
I don't know. I mean, you asked me what John 3:16 was.
Yes, and guess what? What you just told me was not... I mean, I now know that's associated with those numbers in that book with regard to with regard to the mythology, I didn't learn anything new. I already knew God gave up his only son, died, so we can all be good, and if we live, believe in him and all that shit. Now, this is just a thing that bugs me in general. Like, and it's sad, because I also have issues with a lot of missionary work things in the same route, but I'm like, at least you're going places and you're teaching people a religion with which they're not familiar, as opposed to here where you're just basically nagging them with a religion with which they are familiar.
I get what you're talking about. See where you're coming from. I mean, it's such a... Most people have been raised with it, around it, or with its themes and media. It's hard not to have some pretty basic knowledge about the tenets of Christianity. And so then to go proselytize... Well, I mean, when I was a church elder, I often pointed out to our church, which was a heavily proselytizing church, that... a lot of evangelical churches are involved in encouraging people to move from one church to another, not encouraging people to start going to church who weren't going to church in the first place.
Really?
Yes, that's right. A lot of churches that are when people say, "Oh, this is a fast-growing church," it's not because they're going out and converting people who are lapsed Christian. Well, that might be true. The lapsed Christian thing might be. Or people who weren't Christian to begin with, or were atheists to begin with, or anything like that. It's mostly people who are already Christian, maybe they're already attending church, or yes, perhaps they've lapsed, but not in their faith, just in their church attendance, and now they're going to go to this big church. It's a lot of shuffling around people who already believe.
Most of my experience with proselytizing was the Latter-day Saints, and I feel like, well, I still feel like they have the problem of that, we already know, but I feel like they get a pass in terms of converting other Christians because their faith has a whole separate set of gospels and definitely has different beliefs on them.
Right.
So it has that. But yeah, if you're just going from one major Protestant branch to another, that's weird.
Pretty much it. Most of the time you hear of Christianity expanding in the United States, it's just people who are believers in one denomination moving to another or starting up going to church again after being raised in some other denomination. Mm. Now, there is, in other places, there are people who were not Christian before. Maybe they were Buddhist, or maybe they were something else, and Christianity is growing in some of those places, but probably not any faster than anything else. So, and of course, a lot of research has shown that the main determining factor as to whether or not a certain ideology or philosophy or whatever will grow and succeed has nothing to do with the contents of that ideology, but with how many babies the adherents are having. Basically, that's the main determinant for the success of a given worldview, is how much its adherents make babies.
If this is the first time you're joining us, welcome to the Buck 50 Club. We're like the 700 Club, but less. What's the 700 from the 700
Club? Substantially less. I do not know. If that's some biblical reference, I don't know what it is.
Anyway, if this is your first time, let me explain how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks like yourselves, cool people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its ego-driven servants, draw those note cards out of the hat, at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show. No, what I said earlier when you reminded me of something to bring up. After our last episode, Neuroduck texted me and said, you do really know why they say Iowa, right? And I said, no, I don't. Do you know what?
Well, the state's supposed to be named after an Indian tribe that is typically called the Iowa.
Yes.
But other than that,
No, that's the one.
Okay.
It's because the Indian tribe supposedly called the Iowa.
But it's never been spelled the way they spell that.
I thought you had the Iowa in your script and you spelled it that way.
With a Y at the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the state, in like all of its official documents or whatever, has never had a Y at the end.
No. It's Iowa, but yeah.
That's what.
But when you write down people saying Iowa, you do it with a Y at the end.
Yeah.
In the. How did I forget his name? Famous blind musician.
Ray Charles?
Yes, in the Ray Charles song. I keep wanting to call him Charles something. In the Ray Charles song, it says Iowa, Kansas, and it's spelled with something. So apparently, it wasn't miscommunication, it was just attempting to honor the heritage of the Native Americans.
I suppose.
In the song.
I suppose. The tribes that the officially recognized tribes that descend from those original natives, I believe are still called the Iowa. Well, actually, I'm not sure what they're officially called anymore, because a lot of native groups have taken to calling themselves like what they used to call themselves and not what white settlers called them. But some of them, their official names, as far as the United States government's concerned, is still, you know, Cherokee or Sioux or Iowa or whatever.
Yeah.
But the Iowa people call themselves something else that I don't know.
Promise Keepers, wasn't it?
I forget. I've seen the word like written out, but I've never heard it properly pronounced, so I'm not going to attempt to pronounce it.
By the way, I apologize to any Iowa natives who are listening. I do not mean to associate you with the Promise Keepers. I don't apologize to Promise Keepers, because fuck those guys. if you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up. So, how's your week been?
Well, busy, but I don't think it with anything that anyone would be interested to hear about. Although, Justice League trailer showed up since last I talked to you, I think.
Oh, yeah, I didn't look.
Yeah.
I just...
I don't think it looks very good.
Heard an interesting announcement.
what's that? Oh, Joss Whedon's gonna produce, write, and direct, possibly.
Yeah, it's, the Batgirl. Deal's not finalized.
The Batgirl movie.
Joss Whedon is set to produce, write, and direct the Batgirl movie.
And that's, I mean,
is it weird that I have slightly mixed feelings about that?
Well, it's
a good choice, but
it could be so much worse.
Absolutely, but it could be Zack Snyder.
But I'm not happy about it. I mean, there's nothing about him directing the Batgirl movie that makes me think, oh, that'll make it good. But see, I'm not a big fan of his anyway, and I know a lot of other people are, and that's fine.
Yeah. But I am a big fan, but could be worse. There are problematic. That's a new pose, Eddie. That was interesting.
Well, like when he was, you know, people were thinking he was going to do the Wonder Woman movie. I was not thrilled with that either. But I don't think that anyone that they announced after that, I was thrilled with them either. I mean, Patty Jenkins is directing it, and that's great. But, I mean, she's not writing it, and I'm not sure.
No, and if rumors to be believed, Zach had a hand in writing
it. Exactly. So that I don't think that was probably a step up from Joss Whedon. But I wasn't thrilled when he was going to do it, and I wasn't disappointed when he wasn't, except that I was afraid that they might find someone even worse. But whatever.
Supposedly, Dan Harmon was brought in to doctor the Doctor Strange script. But supposedly, every bit he wrote did not make it into the final cut.
No, but I mean, I'm not sad or depressed about him doing it. It's like, okay, well, we'll see what he does. It might be good.
I'm ambivalent today, but we'll see. I mean, the real thing is I don't care so much about the DC Universe, although I will go see Wonder Woman. And I really hope Wonder Woman does well.
But
Joss Whedon made. Sorry about that. Just did something really disgusting, so gross that I'm not even going to talk about it on the podcast. William's the only one who has to suffer through it because he can see it. Gross. What were you saying?
I was going to ask how your week went.
My week was all right. I had a little bit of a relapse. In fact, if I cough a bunch here, apologies. I've been eating cough drops all day. A little bit of a relapse with my cough and my achy, gross sickiness. So I stayed home yesterday, which I hated. I have spent so much time homesick that I hated being here. Actually, I have stuff to work on at work. I was like, I wanted to be doing that. So that kind of sucked.
Yeah, and it's only the end of March.
Yeah. But today I felt much better and I went back to work.
That's good.
And that was good.
Mm-hmm.
I have discovered something. I'm still playing Dragon Age. I'm really getting more and more antsy to just be done with it. But we'll see how that goes. I discovered something interesting. So, I am a fan of, you know how PBS, and this is true on most PBS stations, I think, but especially I was big on this. One evening a week, they have a bunch of British comedies on there.
Okay.
And they alternate. They every year or so they switch out which ones are there and so forth, and right now their lineup from 8 to 10 is As Time Goes By, starring a comparatively young Judi Dench, Keeping Up Appearances, which is a classic many people are familiar with, starring a woman playing a character of Hyacinth Bouquet, who's obsessed with class.
My dad loves that show.
A lot of people love that show. I've watched quite a bit of it. It gets old real fast because there's, again, the sympathy component. She's just so horrible. Like, every episode, I just want to see her, like, stabbed in the eyeball. Which is funny because she's wonderful and she's done other things. She had a whole series of mysteries where she played the main detective person named Hetty Wainwright and was wonderful in a very different role. At 9 o'clock is Waiting for God, which used to be one of my favorite things in the world. I'm finding this time around it hasn't aged super well. It's still good, but it's not as ha-ha funny, I guess. About just two old people in a retirement home and dealing with that. And there's a lot of, you know, the owner of the place is a scumbag who's trying to pinch pennies everywhere, and so they're always fighting against him, and they're very different personalities. They start off because they're just neighbors. They share a terrace, and they end up sort of becoming friends. And it's a pretty sweet show. And then at 9:30 is a show called The Last of the Summer Wine. I don't know if you're familiar with this at all.
No.
This is one of the longest-running sitcoms ever. because it went from 1973 to 2010.
Mm.
And at least one actor was in every single episode.
Wow.
And it is a really dumb and simple show. It is a small village in Yorkshire. That's it. It's just a bunch. Actually, for some reason, it's also a town that's primarily old people. There's very few young people in town. And it's just sort of the daily life of these people. And it frequently focuses around a trio of older men that varies through the years what three it is, that just sort of wander around and have weird philosophical discussions on the bank of the river or whatever, and then go find somebody who's doing some crazy thing. And the humor is all really broad and a fair bit of slapstick, and they have incredibly heavy accents. So there are some people that's even hard to understand, especially because there's a bit of a patois, and some of them use like thee and summit and things like that, and words that you wouldn't recognize. And it's just silly as hell, and it's incredibly soothing because it doesn't matter, and they're all just so charming, and it's got laugh tracks, so you know when you laugh, all that kind of stuff. And I recently discovered that most, if not all of it's just on YouTube. And so I've started watching. It's frequently my right before bed thing because it's very relaxing and calming. But what's funny is it's in no particular order on there. So I'll watch an episode from like season 28 and then watch an episode from season 5. And it's fascinating. And then things I didn't realize, because apparently I hadn't seen some of the older episodes. One of the long-standing characters who is a very uptight and sensible and no-nonsense old widow woman, who is the butt of many jokes because she's very serious and doesn't put up with their shenanigans, wasn't always a widow on the show. She had a friggin' husband for, like, multiple seasons.
Wow.
And there's lots of people coming. And then there's things of, like, there's about a 20-year plot line in which this one husband is attempting to have an affair. And he sort of is, but it's kind of ridiculous because he's very bad at being sneaky. He spends way more time on his plots than he does with this woman trying to get away. His wife always knows. He always gets found out. And they never do anything. It's sort of a point of it that when they finally successfully succeed for just a little while, like, being alone somewhere, he doesn't really, like, no romance happens. And she finds this very frustrating. So it's just kind of silly in its way. But I always found it interesting because the younger woman, though younger than them, is pretty old, and to me, not classically particularly attractive or anything. But then I'm watching these earlier seasons, and I'm like, oh, 20 years ago, she was quite something. And then just age hit her like everybody else, but then they just kept running with it. I mean, she still does a wonderful job. But yeah, just weird stuff like that. I'm like, oh my God, that's where that started. At least one guy on the show, the actor died. And so they had the character die, and then they had the character's son shortly afterwards come to town looking to reconnect with his father, and he ended up sort of staying and being involved, played by the dead actor's actual son, who was also an actor.
Wow.
So that was a weird coincidence. But yeah, so I've been watching a little bit of that. I got one thing left, but I'm trying to make sure there was nothing else before that. Nope. I saw a movie. Actually, seen a couple of movies, but I don't know if there's any worth mentioning. They were weird Amazon bullshit. But I saw a movie in the theater.
Oh.
We saw Logan.
Okay.
Logan, the third and final of the Wolverine-focused films. Oh, wow, they're early. Trish, supper's here.
How's it going tonight, sir?
Trish, did you hear that? Okay. I think she was asleep.
Yep. Have a good night.
Did you fall asleep? Alright, let's see who's is whose. I think this is yours. mine and see.
Hi, Hattie.
Says hi. Are you sure you didn't fall asleep? You sound like you fell asleep. Yeah, no, this one's fine.
I was like as close to sleep as you could be without
being asleep. Sorry, baby. Oh, come here for a second. So earlier, Addy's just insane.
Yeah.
And he runs. He runs out here while we're sitting recording, and he leaps up onto the scratching thing, but he does it so that he's hanging by his back legs, like hooked to it, and then he's just hanging down off of it so that he can scratch with his front legs.
You're a weirdo.
Right?
That was strange.
It was like he. My theory is that he ran at it, and just momentum took its course, like physics happened, and he had no plan. So he just waited till he stopped moving and then scratched. That's, like,
he has no plan.
Yeah.
Like, period.
So I think just physics happened.
Did you tell Adders he got his staples out?
No, I should.
Addy got his staples out.
He did not like that experience, but he's good now. And
that's good.
It's all good. And he's doing good. Anyway, so Logan.
Logan, yeah.
Full disclosure. Not that they all tie together for shit, but my experience with the X-Men franchise has been the first three X-Men, like the actual trilogy,
mm-hmm.
And Deadpool, which is technically, I think, part of the same continuity.
Really?
And that's, I'm not positive, but I've seen Deadpool. That's it. Wait. Technically, we saw X-Men First Class.
Okay.
And we didn't like it, and that's why we stopped watching X-Men movies. But so haven't seen Days of Future Past, haven't seen
Apocalypse,
haven't seen either of the other Wolverine movies. And I will say, I think that's fine going into this movie. In fact, yeah, I think most of the backstory that they reference isn't actually backstory from those movies. So. And it's not stuff that you need to know, it's stuff that they just sort of talk about. Like, you know, backstory in a movie. Doesn't always have to be from an earlier movie.
Right.
I'm guessing you have not seen it.
I haven't seen it, no. I probably will when it's on DVD.
I didn't... Initially, I had zero interest. Why would I? Wolverine, for starters, I've never liked Wolverine as a character. I've never liked him. He seems to me to be an obnoxious, bullshit, macho fantasy. Never been interested in me. Also, in his original costume, looked like an idiot. That yellow and black thing. Terrible. So yeah, had no interest. But people won't shut up about it. Mm. And how awesome it is.
Yeah.
And like Patrick Stewart's in it, and Patrick Stewart says it was an awesome enough experience that he's decided he doesn't want to do any more X-Men movies because he wants to go out on this note.
Mm.
And the trailers do look interesting. And I hear like people are like, it's not an action movie. There's action in it, but that's not what it is. And then the tip of the iceberg was some of my friends had already seen it, and they're like, we really want to see it again. Why don't you all come with us? So we did.
Okay.
Are you going to ask me what I thought? You never do. It's so rude.
Why do I have to ask? That's what I'm here for, is to hear what you think about things.
That's how conversations work.
What did you think of it, Tony?
Well, thanks for asking. I can't speak for Trisha. I get the sense she liked it less than me. Maybe did not like it, but I know she's got her own thing. So we were not in sync on this one, so I can only talk for myself. You do need to know up front. It's rated R. It's got a lot of F-words in it. It is very violent. Like, I went in knowing this was a movie about people who have murder claws that come out of their fingers. And still, it's really violent. That being said, I thought it was really good. Because, in addition to being a good action movie, it's just a good movie. Like, there is real drama in it, there's real performance in it, there's an actual interesting story. To a degree that I would say some of the action movie plot points that they had to have in there to sort of make it work were really kind of just barely sketched in. Like, they glossed over a lot of shit because they didn't have time for that part.
Because
we were focused on the drama that was involved.
That's interesting.
Also a really good performance from Stephen Merchant, which makes me think more and more he should do less comedy and more drama.
Well, he's got the chops for it anyway.
Right?
Yeah. I agree with that.
And then, for those of you who've seen the trailer, it involves a little girl who doesn't speak. She did a marvelous job. Pretty much everybody did it. It was a complete waste of Richard E. Grant. He's sort of the ultimate antagonist in it. And he's hardly there, and his part wasn't interesting. And yeah. But yeah, I mean, with the caveats I mentioned, it was really good. That being said, because I was thinking about talking about this earlier, I realize now it's not leaving a big impression on me. Like, I haven't thought about it much since then, except when, like, people pointedly ask. It's not one of those that's, like, stuck with me that I think about.
Right.
Patrick Stewart's performance was really good, though, as was Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, I think it's worth seeing if you're not bothered by the two caveats up front. But I mean, and NeuroDuck's parents went with us, and they weren't super fond of the F-bombs, and I'm guessing the violence was a bit much, but they seem to still be okay with it.
We'll probably see it when it comes out on DVD.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no reason it needs to be on the big screen. I'm still trying to decide if I'm going to see Power Rangers in the theater. I was a Power Rangers kid. 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I went and saw the first movie in the theater. I was super excited.
Yeah, we talked about that.
It's getting okay reviews. Not great. And the criticisms seem like things that would make me not be so into it.
Mm.
And so, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I'll see it at some point, but I don't know if I'll bother to see it in the theater.
So you want to talk about that Cracked video? What's...
Oh, People Watching.
Yeah, People Watching. That's what
I
it's
just,
called.
You and I are both, like, consistently watching it, so I thought it's worth saying. So there was a new People Watching video that was the Total Losers Anonymous support group.
What did
you think?
It seemed to be rehashing some of its previous material in this, it felt like.
I would agree that there were shades of the confession booth one.
Yeah.
And the speed dating one, I suppose.
I mean, you know, it was fine, I guess. I mean, they're always interesting, even if they missed their mark a little bit.
Yeah.
But it seems like we're at that point where, okay, now we're going to start seeing things that really seem reminiscent of things they've already done. And
it's all based on having certain insights. And the creator of this definitely has certain insights. Two or three. And they might be running out. This, more than has been for a while, really felt a little... I mean, there was some insight, there was an interesting concept, but we didn't go anywhere with it. It just kind of felt whiny. I hate to use it. I feel like that's, you know, a really rough term to use, but that's what it felt like. That I feel I keep drawing parallels between Wachowski's work and this stuff for some reason, because I think the Wachowskis and the creator of this, their fantasy utopia looks exactly the same. I think they both want a world in a certain way that they like, but this seems to be almost the opposite. You know, Wachowskis are obsessed with, you know, we're all one and we're all connected and stuff. This seems to be like the opposite of we're all separate and doesn't it suck? It's just hammering the alienation thing home. And at first there were bits that were sort of hopeful, and now it's just like, yeah, no, it kind
of
sucks.
Part of the problem is we're seeing the same characters over and over again talking about the same types of problems.
Yep.
So, like, one of the characters, Candy, I guess it was, talked about how she was in the hospital recently and nobody visited her, but the whole episode was somebody visiting her, so that turned out not even to be true. And and they were almost all of them were in that confessional thing.
Yep.
And that
I think the new guy in this episode was the only actual new guy.
Yeah, right. And so all of these people, in other words, since they're using all the same characters, in your mind you almost try to make a character arc out of it, like they're going to learn something, but they're not. But they're always complaining about the same things. So you know, then it starts to be the little cognitive dissonance there, because, well, this person was in this episode and they said that they had this insight, and now they suddenly don't have that insight. So
yeah.
So I think that maybe doesn't make it work very well to keep using the same characters talking about the same issues over and over.
Also, I got two words for you.
What's that?
Arm tattoos.
Yeah.
Why does everybody in the world of people watching has just elaborate sleeves on their arms and stuff? Like,
I don't know.
There's a lot of, and they look cool, but I start wondering, I'm like, in this world, does everybody just have a lot of tattoos? Or are we saying that tattooed people are the depressed ones? Like, why does everybody have so many tattoos?
Well, I think this one was trying to make the same point that the confessional thing was making, which is that it does, you know, you think you know people by how they look or by what they do. That was a big thing about by what people do for a living. And you think you know everything about how they live, but you don't know anything about it. And when you look a little deeper, everyone's a lot more similar than they are different. But it's basically sending out this message that we think we know each other, but we don't know each other, and we basically end up spending our time alone in our apartments thinking we know what everybody else is thinking when we don't. Okay, if that's true, which I'm sure it's not true for everybody, but let's say that was true for most people or whatever, what's the solution to it? This is just a statement of how crappy things are and we can't do anything about it except watch these YouTube videos that tell us everyone is thinking the same thing we are?
Yeah, there was initially sort of more hope for human connection in the first couple, but now it's feeling very sort of just hipsterish to me.
Well,
it's sort of translating to society. I can't even just like
well,
in long, more beautifully done.
And here they are in a group situation where they're all talking about these things and connecting, which is presumably what going to a group thing is for, but they leave no better off than they came, which doesn't make any sense. Why would you even go to this group if it isn't to you know, move forward in your issues or whatever.
But I did have one great thing out of this. The singer-songwriter character that got her own video.
Yeah.
I hated her. I didn't really like that video either. I mean, I got what the point was, but I didn't think it was that well. I didn't like that. And I didn't like her this until at a particularly useful point, she just gets up and leaves, and I'm like, oh my god, that's the whole point of this character, is she's just sort of a waste of, like, human interaction. And then I thought that was hilarious. And
I didn't
just
really...
Just, like, left. I kept waiting, like, are we going to bring her back? No, she just left.
I didn't really get the point of that character in her own video either. I didn't understand.
Well, and the only way you clued in was when you actually got to see what she was doing on her phone.
Which was nothing.
Exactly.
She was using it.
So the implication was that she was just so socially uncomfortable that rather than talk to anyone, she would rather stand around for good lengths of time and pretend to be doing stuff on her phone.
But
also is weird, because why don't you just do stuff on your phone, you know, get a copy of Candy Crush or something.
But then she would go up on stage and she would be very open and all kinds of other
and
stuff.
Which the implication, you know, people can do that. Hell, I can do that.
I guess.
I can seem really happy and excited about things when I am not in the slightest. But yeah, I didn't think it warranted all the space that it had. But I do like the connective tissue. I do like that we're seeing the same characters. Because in your head, you can start doing that, like, oh, that's so like him or whatever. Or why are they talking? That seems weird. Or things like that. But yeah, I'm losing. I mean, I'm sure I'll still watch them. I can manage 5 to 10 minutes once a week on a channel that I already watch every single video on. So.
Well, and they're provocative anyway. So.
And they're pretty. It's some gorgeous art and animation. I really like the look of them. So, I feel like that was mostly just for us. Maybe Jazz, if she started watching them. The rest of you, go to Cracked and find the stuff that says people watching. It's spelled P-E-E-P-L-E to be cute. So, and yeah, there's these animated little plays about how depressing the world is. Check them out.
And yet, I don't think you're supposed to be depressed at the end. I think you're supposed
to. And I wasn't. The first two. I think you're supposed to think,
oh, see, we're all the same. But the characters aren't growing in the situation, so.
The first two, I was hopeful. The third one was heart-wrenching in a way that I was fine with, because it was supposed to be. That was the depression as that one.
Oh, yeah.
Looking dude. That one, like, was terribly depressing in a way that it was supposed to, and it was just really nicely done. But then, yeah. I believe the fourth one was death is bullshit, and since then I've been having issues. Yes, death is bullshit, the singer-songwriter, friend zone, and now the support group. Yeah, and I haven't particularly liked any of this. He's got the hat, people. He's going to start asking questions. Better watch out.
Sue Klaus.
I know her. She's the wife of Santa Claus, right? No.
Dear Hat.
I remember her as the number one Peter Gabriel fan in the world.
Do you think all the alt national parks folks would let us camp for free? No.
No, I do not think they would. And I don't think we should try, because the Park Service is going to lose a bunch of goddamn funding. We should give them what money we can. Have those really lived on? I got to admit, I didn't follow any of the alt agencies.
I don't know if they're still relevant to the conversation now or not.
Well, I mean, the latest stuff that's come through has proven that climate change is a hoax invented by China. Like, we're not even going to try and pay lip service to it anymore. So that's depressing as fuck.
Yeah.
The one that happened today, bill passed the Senate after it's already passed the House. And, of course, as usual, Pence had to cast a tie-breaking vote. And so it's a new law that says the states, if they want to, don't have to share their federal funding with Planned Parenthood.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yep. And I'm trying to rationalize. I'm like, 7 or 8 shitty states will do that, and the rest of us will go on like normal. But I'm like, that's still not good. I don't want to move to one of the shitty states. Although that being said, until Branstad hopefully goes to China, we're kind of in a bad place, too.
Yeah, it's not that great.
Also, any of you... Oh, my God. I was just thinking about this. We're kind of fucked here, aren't we? I feel like your family lives in Steve King's district?
No. Okay. No, he's definitely further...
Mason City, and I think he gets Ames.
Oh, yeah, really?
When I looked it up, I think he gets Ames.
Well, I thought he was further west, but I guess he's just further north. But no, I don't think that's their district.
Because I'm... So Steve King said his said his stupid thing about not being able to build civilization with other people's babies. And horrible.
I can't believe
immediately
that
decried that.
But I mean, this isn't the first time he says something stupid, though.
So I look him up, and he's the lunatic who said that all of civilization was created by white people back at the convention.
Oh yeah, a couple years ago. The moment he was elected, but he's been like that.
This can't be his first term, because he's been doing this shit.
Oh, no, it's not. I don't know how many terms he's had.
People are fucking reelecting.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's not right.
No, it's not. He's crazy. But, I don't know.
And sometimes, I do find it weird. There are some people who have been in Congress for a really long time, and I don't understand how. But I understand the idea that some people might vote for their sitting congressman or senator because they've been there long enough that they have a certain level of clout.
Mm-hmm. Committee seats.
Yeah, exactly. And stuff. Yeah. But then that gets... Because I'm still just like, how are people cool with Mitch McConnell? You know? How does that work? And Paul Ryan, a little bit. I guess I kind of get Paul Ryan to some people, but I'm amazed. I mean, it's a given if Grassley or Ernst come up for re-election, I'm voting against them. And my representative, our representative, is Dave Lobsack.
Mm-hmm.
So I have now started working really hard to keep tabs on his voting record. Luckily, there are many sites that will do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, he's okay. He still probably can get my vote next time around. But I have this, like, I'm having this urge to be like, regardless of party, let's just oust everybody and start over because they're all fuckheads. And so I'm balancing that out, and it would take very little for me to vote him out at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He just has to step out of line a little because I don't put up with Lister. But so far, he's been good. I had to check these most recent ones, and he's been where I want him to be on them. So.
Yeah, I've been tracking him for years, and he mostly votes along party lines. I believe he voted in favor of the pipeline. Sometimes he'll vote in weird ways that don't make any sense.
Yeah.
And he sent a letter out to people that he knew were not going to be happy with him about that. And, of course, it wasn't a very convincing letter. And a few other things. But I'd say 95% of the time he votes precisely the way you would expect a Democrat to vote.
I have always kind of just grudgingly been okay with him, and I found that a lot of other people feel kind of similar. They still vote for him, but it's always just a, okay. But I realized recently that whatever reason other people feel that way is very different from mine, because I'm pretty sure just from day one I have been prejudiced against him because his last name is Lobsack, and that just sounds horrible to me. I've never been comfortable with that last name. And let me be clear here. I have zero idea what the ethnic heritage is on that name. But it's lobe, like in your brain, and sack, like with your balls. And it just feels weird.
Okay.
Be like, you know, this is our representative brain scrotum. Like, that's strange.
Yeah, and it just,
it's not his fault, but it just feels odd to me. And I think I have been prejudiced against him because of that for a long time. And he seems a little weenie-ish, which doesn't help things.
Weenie-ish.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't think the national parks will let us camp for free, and I don't think they should. Also, I don't like camping.
No, you don't.
I feel like I should like camping. I used to like camping.
Why? Why do you think you should like it?
Because I used to. That's the thing. It's like, it's not like I had a traumatic, it's not like, you know, I went to summer camp and somebody murdered all the counselors for having sex, and so now I'm scared of summer camp.
Would like, that make you scared of summer camp?
It might. Now, don't you love how there's all, in those kind of movies, there's almost never kids there? It's always like the week before when they're just orienting the counselors and stuff. They always have
like
an excuse.
Like an interim week. Like,
so not to have the kids there. Cause, and that's the thing, and that's why the movie Halloween 3, you ever see Halloween 3?
No.
It's Halloween 3 : Season of the Witch.
Okay. No, I've never seen it.
Okay, so, you remember Halloween, even if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I remember
Michael Myers, he's got the
it existed,
scary
yes.
white mask that actually is a William Shatner mask that's right. been painted white on the inside.
Right.
Killed people, whatever. Sequel is an actual sequel, Halloween 2. It's what happens after Halloween 1. It's not a prequel. It's not an origin story. There's some origin stuff in it, but it happens afterward. Halloween 3, nothing to do with it. Michael Myers is not mentioned. Michael Myers does not come up. There is no character that at all has anything to do with the first two movies in this third movie.
Hmm.
It is about a company that is making a bunch of Halloween masks and selling them all over the place, and then they're going to broadcast this signal on TV, and everybody wearing the mask, these weird chips in the back will make them die and go crazy, and I don't know the subject. They're trying to like raise, it's a pagan ritual on the solstice of Samhain that's going to raise a demon and give ultimate power. I don't know what it is, but it's that kind of thing. Terrible movie. No one should see it.
It sounds terrible.
Awful. Tom Skerritt as our lead, which is just weird. It's a terrible, terrible film. However, it gets points that almost no horror movie does for one thing.
What's that?
There is a scene. Part of the thing setting this up is they're doing test runs. And so they would take a family and they would put them in a room with like a couch and stuff, and they're watching TV, and they give them the Halloween masks. And so there's this mother, or there's this mother and father sitting on the couch in this room watching the TV, and the kid's sitting on the floor, and he's watching, and he's putting on the mask because he thinks the mask is cool. And then they do the thing, and the kid's very still, and then weird shit where like a cockroach crawls out of the mask or something. Anyway, the point is to kill the kid on screen. I don't know, that doesn't sound like a thing you'd want to back up, but movies are notorious wusses about this. A movie that has the most horrific, disturbing plot ever and all sorts of grotesque thing, but they're just like, oh, no, can't do the kid. So many movies, it's like, oh, no, we skipped the kid. Or at best, kid was killed off screen, don't worry, but no, they killed the kid. I was like, that took conviction to do that in your terrible, horrible, awful movie. So... I guess they got points for having balls, but that was about it. You know, like some sort of lobe sack they had. That.
You're terrible.
I am. So is that movie. Don't see that movie. Or me. Give me that.
Give me that.
I feel like Sue is not going to be super satisfied with that answer.
Probably not.
You know what?
Probably not.
She can go camping. That'll be fine.
And pay top dollar for it.
Alright, here's another one. This is from Coffee.
Okay.
As so many are. If it weren't for coffee, we'd be out of business.
Probably.
I feel like there's a lot of places that say that, but yeah. They probably spell coffee differently.
Yeah, probably.
What's the most important promise you've ever made to yourself?
To myself?
And I wasn't going to touch it for a week to give a chance for the swelling to go down. I promised myself. And the doctor. And the pharmacist.
But I don't know.
And my parents.
I don't know if I've ever made a promise to myself.
I don't make a lot of promises to myself.
I'm trying to think. I mean, what kind of promise does a person make to themselves? Like, I promised myself I'm going to...
I promised I wasn't going to eat too much. I promised I was going to... I
promised myself I wasn't going to cry at this thing.
There we go. That's one.
But people don't really mean that, do they?
Well, you know, like, I promised myself I'd go to the gym every day. But I don't do those. I don't...
Is that what a resolution is? A promise to yourself?
I guess. It depends on how you frame it in your head. I'm not a big fan of promises. It's a weird thing to say. And it's only a thing I've sort of come to terms with in recent years. But it's sort of... I don't know. It's along the lines of the monogamy talk that we've had before. Where, like, if you set these arbitrary rules, then your relationship works in those confines, which means something really inappropriate and damaging to your relationship can be just fine, because it's technically not cheating, but meanwhile, something that was relatively insignificant but technically counted as cheating has to end your relationship. And that is just arbitrary, if you say. And it's the same thing. A promise to me says... Some of the time, I'm going to tell you things, and it's going to be shit. Like, I'm going to tell you things that aren't true, or I'm going to say I'm going to do things that I don't do. And that's cool. But this category of promise means I have to.
Well, I don't know. Sometime early in my life, I realized that promises in general were a bad idea. Where I made some promises that... In good faith, like I didn't have any doubt that I would be able to fulfill this promise.
But sometimes things outside your control.
Yeah, but then something happens, and I wasn't able to keep the promise, and it occurred to me that when you promise somebody something, you're not just promising that something will happen, like will definitely happen, but you're promising that the universe isn't going to do certain things. I can't promise that, so if I can't promise what the universe is going to do, how can I always promise what I'm going to do? And that really soured me on promises in general. I mean, I have a lot of people say, well, do you promise you're going to do such and such? And I would have to frankly tell them, I'm not going to promise
to try my best.
I'm not going to promise you that I won't be in a car accident on the way there, or that this won't happen or that won't happen. All I can do is assure you that I have every intention to do it, and the only thing that will stop me is something beyond my control.
But I'm also just trying to, like, who's the person in one's life that you trust at such a specific level that if they say to you, no, I'm totally going to do that for you, you're like, eh, I don't know that I will. But if they say, no, I promise I'm going to do that, you're like, okay, definitely.
The person promised.
Good. Like, if I don't trust you to just say, I'll do that, why the fuck would I trust you because you said promise?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I was thinking about this the other day because this is a common trope, but I saw it on that 70s show recently where somebody was trying to make somebody promise and they said, okay, I promise. And I mean, it's a little kid technique, but it comes up a lot with this whole thing, like, I had my fingers crossed, or I said, you know, or the Jedi bullshit. From a certain perspective, what I told you was true. I'm like, no. And that's why I am a big proponent of honesty. I also lie all the time, because the verisimilitude of the thing is not, that's not the point. The point is the intention. Am I seeking to deceive you? No. Then I'm being honest. Am I seeking to deceive you? Like, that's... I tell lies when I don't think they matter. I never tell lies when it will matter.
Right.
I never tell lies when it's actual information that's important. And yeah, I don't... If I trust you, I trust you whether or not you say promise. And if I don't trust you, then I don't trust you. And... Plomus isn't a word. Fuck off.
Well, you know, it happens in stories all the time. Someone promises something, and that's always a signal that it's not going to happen.
Or that Deus Ex Machina will occur at the end, and then it'll
happen. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those are the two outcomes. It'll happen at the last second because the universe bent over backwards, or it won't happen.
Yeah. And that will, and the fact that it didn't happen will create some kind of conflict.
This reminded me, have you seen, there was an obsessive pop culture disorder that was talking about things that happen in relationships in movies that never happen in real life, and the big one that was just really killer was the one where people are pretending to be a couple and someone is skeptical and tells them to kiss.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious just as a concept, and it was a really funny thing, but they also pointed out, like, this never happens in a story where the couple is actually just a couple. Like, nobody's ever like, you know, oh, you're a couple, kiss, and they're like, okay, so we do. And it's like the same sort of thing. Like, nobody in a movie or a story ever promises unless the reality of that promise hinges, like the entire story hinges on whether or not that succeeds. Nobody's ever like, I promise to do this, and later they just do it, and you're like, thanks. Like, that never comes.
It doesn't, promising things doesn't seem like something a mature person does, as a rule. Like, you know what I'm saying? It sounds like, seems like something you only do when you're too young to understand that it's just not a smart thing to do.
Well, except I think, like, it's integrated into us. So I think a lot of mature people still think it, because it's what we're used to. I mean, I guess I agree with you that I believe it is... I believe that maturity, in certain ways, shows you the lack of necessity for promises. But I don't want to go so far as to say that immature people still promise things. Because that's what... It's like true love and shit like that. We're all raised to believe that this is a thing, and a promise is a promise. That's the important one, you know? Giving my word, you know, that I haven't figured out a way to fit it into my story yet, but it's a fantasy story, and you know, fantasy stories always have these like rules, and you know, like, oh, fairies can't tell a word of untruth, or if you ask something three times they have to respond, and all these, you know, frequently when there's supernatural creatures in a story, there has to be some thing where, like, oh, they have to, they can't attack you on holy ground, or they, you know, whatever else. And I want it to be, it is a function of my story, but I keep wanting to make it a plot point where none of that shit is real. where supernatural creatures, just like normal people, can lie and manipulate or be confused or do whatever the fuck they want. And all that happens to them is the natural consequences that occur when people do those actions. Right.
Now, I've known people who make promises in order to manipulate other people. For example, they'll make a promise they don't have any intention to keep, but they know it's going to make a certain person do a certain
thing. Yeah.
Or
they'll free with it. Oh, come on, this time, and then I promise this lie.
Or they'll make a promise that relies on somebody else doing it. So they'll go to that person and say, hey, I need you to loan me your car. It's like, well, no, I need my car. But I promised so-and-so I'd be at such and such a place.
That one, I think, is hilarious. It's
like, I didn't promise them you'd be there. Like,
you're no good liar.
But you know, they want you to feel guilty that they're not going to be able to keep their promise. It's like, nope, it doesn't work like that.
You definitely don't have that problem.
But some people do cave into that kind of manipulation.
Oh, yeah. Promises are a good tool for guilt.
Yeah.
I always love the promises to protect people. Because I'm just like...
Yeah, that's in stories a lot.
How does that work?
I'll always be there for you. You're going to die one day.
I did watch a different movie this week. It was the riff tracks of Jack the Giant Killer, the old 1960s movie.
Okay.
And Jack is supposed to guard the princess, and he's going to help her run away so she'll be safe. And he's protect her, and he promises her father, the king, and he says, I promise you that she'll be protected so long as I live. And I'm like, that's helpful, because, you know, that's what you say, you know, I'll protect her. Of course, if someone can murder me, like, if an army shows up and it's just me, I'm not going to promise you. I can wait. So I'm like, that's a good hedging bet. But, and the movie never addresses this, she totally gets kidnapped, and it's 1960, so it's not particular, but bad shit happens to her, and she's a prisoner and shit for quite a while he's not dead. And I'm not saying he could have fixed that. I'm just saying the universe went out of its way to point out that that was a stupid promise.
Right.
And nobody ever addressed that. And that was a shame.
Well, the thing is, though, as a person who avoids making promises because I think they're almost always going to fail, the fact that I don't make promises doesn't prevent me from giving my word and keeping my word.
Yeah.
I just more measured about what I claim I can do and what I claim I have control over.
It doesn't need magic words, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's like,
yeah.
I'll do that for you.
That's it.
Really? Well,
and then you
no,
do
I was lying. You want me to promise? Okay, then I'll promise.
And then if you don't do it, you make an account for that. That's what human beings have done for 200,000 years.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be.
I appreciate the concept of giving one's word as a cultural touchstone, albeit an out-of-date cultural touchstone.
Well,
that was the thing. That was part of socializing, is I give you my word. That's the thing. And I suppose you could say that with promises, too, but I don't think that's how people view them now.
It reflects a level of commitment that in some contexts, you know, if someone is in a particularly vulnerable context, where they're not feeling very sure of anything, and what you want to offer them is some certainty, some stability in what's going on, and you believe you can give them that sincerely and honestly. But in a lot of stories, even support the notion of you saying that when you know it's not true or you don't really believe it, because in the story there's some virtue made out of giving someone hope, even if it's a lie or whatever else.
Of course, in other stories, breaking your word is the one truly evil thing you can do.
Yeah.
And I mean, I suppose if you treat promise as that kind of concept, if you're like, I'm going to do this for you, and I'm like, are you sure? Because it's going to be tricky. And you're like, yeah, totally. I suppose a version of that could be, I promise. But again, I don't feel like that's how society views it now, so I certainly wouldn't use it in that contest. I have gone so far as to say, I promise I'll do what I can, or I promise I'll try. Or, as the Simpsons had one time, Bart said, I can't promise I'll try, but I promise I'll try to try. Which I thought was a very fair one. Because there are a lot of times where I'm like, I really don't want to do this. I can't even promise that I'm going to try. I mean, I'm going to make a token attempt, but because it's important to you, I will try to give a damn enough to try. I've had those situations.
Now, some people it's a matter of a social contract or a pact.
Yeah. And if you want to get formal, I mean, whatever, but it's not doing it for me. We're about out of time, so I promise we'll come back next week. Unless we don't. That should be... I'll start promising. I absolutely promise I'm going to get that for you unless I don't. Those are the kind of promises I can stand behind.
Then the deal's off.
Yes. So then, do we call this episode I Promise Unless I Don't? Or do we call this episode Lobsack?
Don't call it that.
We'd have to spell it different.
Yes, and I don't... Please don't do that.
I feel like we didn't... And we've been having this trouble lately. We haven't really... We don't have big titles that jump out at
us. I think they're fine. I'm not complaining about them. Is someone complaining about them?
No, I just don't like
them. Oh, okay, well.
Normally, I mean, ideally, I get a title. The episode, I'm like, clearly it has to be called this. But lately, I've been like, what's some shit we talked about? I'll mix that in. This one's a little bit one of those. But
all right, well.
I promise to have a better one next week. So like us on Facebook because somebody should write into that. That's the most important thing. themagicaldoghand@gmail.com. Write in, ask us stuff. It'll come out of there and we'll talk about it. Maybe
it'll come out of there. The hat, he means
out of the hat. The hat will poop out your questions and we will address them. Also go to the blog and tell us, make promises to us. themagicaltalkinghead.com. Promises that you'll always listen and you'll never forsake us for another podcast. Till death do us. Wait, now we're getting married.
Don't.
That's, see, because when I think about important promises, that's the closest one. I'm like, I've really stuck to the marriage thing.
Yeah.
That's gone well.
Yeah.
And this podcast, so. That's sad. See, what's the point of promises? All you end up with is 6 years of shitty podcasts. All right, love you guys. Bye.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.